This episode of the Brassy Broadcast brought to you by 317 Sound Design, helping you create, produce, and share podcasts designed to engage your audience. Visit 317sounddesign.com and learn how to share your content on demand when your audience is on the go. Hello, gorgeous. Welcome to the Brassy Broadcast, a weekly conversation where successful dames from across the music industry dish about the business of music. And honey, this ain't their first time at the rodeo. So take a load off, pour yourself a drink, and join the conversation. Hello, and welcome to the Brassy Broadcast, the weekly show where dames from across the music industry dish about the business of music. I'm your host, Jen Eads, here in the studio with one of my favorite Indianapolis Brassy Broads, Amy England from Arthur's Music Store. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen.
I'm so happy that you made time on your day off from the shop to stop by and tell us more about why Arthur's rocks, and how you guys have managed to not just survive, but thrive in an era of big box stores and the internet. So Brassy Bastion, let me just tell you a little bit about Arthur's to get us started. Arthur's Music Store is an Indianapolis musical institution. It's been at the same location in historic Fountain Square neighborhood since 1952, and is still owned and operated by the Arthur family. Amy is a third-generation Arthur and has worked closely alongside her mom, Linda, to learn the family business. And in addition to being an Indianapolis hotspot, Arthur's has also been awarded a Top 100 Dealers Award from NAM, which is the National Association of Music Merchants. So, Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. Now that I've shared a little bit about you with our listeners and about Arthur's and why you're here today, what else do our listeners need to know about you?
Gee, that's kind of a loaded question just to start things off.
Exactly. That's why you're here.
like you said, my name is Amy. I have a husband who is a professional bass player and my daughter, Samantha, who is just about to turn 1 year old and is driving me nuts, but it's okay. She comes to work with me because I came to work with my mom when I was born up until I went to school every day and crawled around on the floor in the store and met musicians and talked and babbled to people from when I was 2 years old, knocked over guitars and broke stuff. And that's what Samantha is doing to me now at the music store. So I guess I deserve it a little bit.
Is it payback great?
Yeah.
Well, and have you seen an increase in sales or traffic since you started bringing Samantha?
Yes.
Because she is the cutest baby in the world.
That is absolutely correct. Baby needs a new pair of shoes. So whenever we need a closer for a big deal, I'll just grab her, you know, take her shoes off, you know, just dirty up her face a little bit and bring her in, you know, and she gets big puppy dog eyes and and closes the deal.
Samantha the closer. I love it. I love it. Don't go into Arthur's if you're feeling weak, because Samantha will close that deal.
That's right.
I think I might have been closed by Samantha a time or two. Yeah, I can attest to that. So I would ask when you decided to go into the family business, but it kind of sounds like you've always been in it.
Well, I certainly have taken little side paths. I went to college, actually, to do computer animation and 3D design and stuff like that. When it was, you know, this was mid-90s, so it was kind of in its infancy as far as schools for that and stuff like that. The problem is when you get into a highly technical field like that, you are basically obsolete within a couple years unless you go back to school and learn the new technology. And it kind of seemed to me it was a vicious cycle of going to school for the rest of my life, and I didn't really want to do that. And I then worked at Harley-Davidson for a little while, and I worked at Bates Art Supply, which I don't even think is around anymore here in Indianapolis for a long time, and Jillian's downtown. I worked in the bowling alley, and
I remember that place.
I've definitely done other things, and what regular corporate jobs have taught me is that, you know, local family-owned businesses are definitely the way to go.
Amen to that. So in the world of the big box stores and stiff internet competition, how's Arthur's continued to thrive?
It is adaptability. That is the number one word that we use all the time at the store. We would have gone out of business years ago if we just sold electric guitars.
Right.
You know, we can't compete with 30 other music stores that are selling the same Fender Strat.
Right.
You know, but if I'm the only music store in town that sells accordions or sells octave mandolins or banjolas or, you know, stuff like that, that right. people definitely want.
Yeah.
There is an increasingly bigger market with that now, with everybody doing all these, you know, different folk subgenres and stuff that they're doing in music. And you need a place that carries that stuff. And so we have found our niche there.
Right.
And do that kind of stuff. More so, I sell more accordions in a month than I do electric guitars.
Really?
Absolutely. 100%.
That is fascinating to me. But I'm not surprised, having been in there and bought an accordion.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, and the crazy thing is, when I go in there, I don't necessarily know that I'm looking for something. And then you'll be like, hey, Jen, check this out. And I'm like, oh, man.
Whatever. I don't even have to do that. You just walk around and do it yourself. I just ring you up.
And then you bring Samantha out to close the deal. That's right. And then you ring me up.
That's right.
Yeah, that's how that works. So what would you say has been one of the biggest challenges for you guys as technology has changed?
Well, and that's kind of the main thing. When we don't carry keyboards, for instance, because the technology changes so quickly in the keyboard market, that for a small business or a locally owned business that has one location, we can't carry five or six different keyboards in stock, because then literally 4 months later, they will be out of date. There's something new that's right. come along on the horizon that everybody wants that these keyboards don't have. And so now we've got, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 keyboards that are just sitting there that we can't sell.
Right.
Or that we have to sell at cost. A large store, or even somewhere like Target or something like that, they can just ship them back, you know, to the headquarters or yeah. ship them to another store and resell them. But we can't do that. So there's some stuff like that that people say, you know, why don't you carry this? Why don't you carry that? Well, first of all, we can't carry everything because we've got a limited amount of space. Even though we have a large shop, you know, you just can't fit everything in there.
Right.
And some things just aren't feasible for a small store to do because, like you said, of the technology changing all the time. And we also, we have to know a little bit about everything that we carry. You know, that's part of the thing about being a store that carries a lot of different items. We don't say, okay, we've got three new Fender electric guitars that came in, so, you know, find out all those specs. Okay, well, that's fine. We have to know, you know, accordions come in which tunings and which diatonic harmonica is the right one for this customer. And, you know, which didgeridoo is this guy looking for, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, we have to know little things about everything. So we can't keep up with a lot of the modern technology that comes in. And a lot of times we don't really want to. I you know, I'm totally fine with an electric guitar and a tube amp. I don't need, you know, fancy digital effects and pedals and stuff like that.
Right.
And that's fine. And our most of our customers really respect that. Some guys are like, oh, you know, you can't be a music store that'll go into, you know, the 21st century without having all of this stuff and all of this technology, but that's fine.
Right.
Exactly. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, I think what's key is that you guys have really found your niche and narrowed it down and focused on it, and you're awesome at it. And there's nobody else really doing that.
Yeah.
So then let's flip this whole thing with technology. And then how have you taken advantage of technology to actually grow your business?
And that definitely is a big thing. It's interesting to me how many local and small businesses don't utilize free technology like Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, you know, to really grow your business. I do a lot of that stuff.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, it's a full-time job just by itself, keeping up with, you know, making sure that there's something on Facebook every day that will engage someone, that will make them stop on their, you know, long feed of cat pictures and say, oh, look at this. This is cool.
Yeah.
You know, and not only that, but then take the time to click on the link and go to our website or something like that. The website is the other thing. There are so many stores, not just music stores, but local businesses in general in Indianapolis, especially that don't have good websites.
Uh-huh.
And that just seems so silly to me.
Right.
You know, it's like, here's something that, you know, that's what I would do if I were looking for something to purchase and wanted to go local. I would look online and try mm-hmm. to find a website that was good and find their hours and, you know, address and all of that
yeah.
stuff. And so we definitely have that going on. We definitely have, you know, good, easy website, lots of stuff on Facebook. I don't tweet.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'm just not that age group. I don't know. So that's a little challenging for us. But other than that, I mean, we definitely do take advantage of doing emails, and Facebook and website and all of that stuff to really help get the word out for just about everything.
Yeah, I will attest that Amy is a master at Facebook because I actually refer to her very lovingly as Devil Woman. Because she posts these great guitar pictures like, hey, everybody, look what we just got in. Like the Gibson.
Uh-huh. The J160.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell everybody Gibson. Why that is so awesome?
We just got in a 1962 Gibson J160E. And why that is significant, the J160E is the same model that John Lennon and Paul McCartney, John Lennon and George Harrison played. And theirs were made in 1962. This one is also made in 1962. And what's funny about that from a vintage appraiser's point of view for these guitars, the ones that are made in 1961 and the guitars that were made in 1963, you know, are worth a couple $1,000s. You know, they're cool, but yeah. they're not really that special. Because this one was made in 1962, it's worth a lot more, 3 or 4 times more than the ones on either side of the year, which is really interesting. And not only that, but this particular one has a serial number that is 10 serial numbers off from the one that John Lennon played, his very first one that he was gifted in Liverpool.
You know, wow.
That was Epstein actually bought them for them, had them shipped from the United States to a store in Liverpool. And they couldn't pay for them at the time. They were $200.
Uh-huh.
And John Lennon didn't have $200.
Yeah.
And so Epstein had to pay for them. And he wrote up this whole great sheet that's in a book by Andy Babiwick that's called Beatles Gear. And it's so killer because it details that they are going to pay so much percentage out of each show that they play to pay off this $200
right.
for this guitar.
Oh, that's awesome.
But John Lennon's guitar, the J160E, was shipped on June 27th of 1962. And the one that we have was shipped on June 24th, 1962. And so not only is it made in the same year, but the same month and maybe even the same week
right.
as the one that John Lennon had and had. Really, he would have had it his, you know, entire career, except it got stolen in 1963. But
oh, wow.
And then he got another one after that in 1964. But that first one did a couple. I'm going to be bad here because I don't really know which album he used that guitar for.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he recorded an entire iconic Beatles album with that guitar.
Right.
And the same person made it out of the same wood in the same factory. You know, as
right.
his guitar. And so that's why it is really, really special. And that guitar just walked in the door. And that's what's great about working at the music store. It was a gentleman that is on a fixed income, and he bought the guitar in 62 from us.
Wow.
From our store. And we had the original, I pulled the original receipt and the original inventory card from when my grandpa ordered it and my grandma checked it in when it came in.
Wow.
Because they were the only two employees in 62.
Yeah.
Because that was right before the big surf boom, you know, and right before, really right before the big Beatles boom. I mean, obviously the Beatles were, you know, definitely doing something at that point. But the fact that John Lennon couldn't buy a $200 guitar means obviously that they weren't doing as much yet. But yeah, so the guy actually purchased it from us in 62 and he's on a fixed income now and he needed money. So we purchased it from him. And when we have something like that, we can't put $1 million into something that we know is going to be worth $1 million.
Right.
So we told this guy, you know, we'll give you enough money right now that you need. And then when it sells, we're going to give you a buttload more money.
Right.
And with that particular instrument, it will be a buttload. that's not an exaggeration at all.
That's one of the reasons why I love coming into shop and looking at guitars, because it's not just some random guitar that some guy just brought it in. You know, there's always some really cool story behind it, or it's almost like Pawn Stars or American Pickers. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what's really engaging.
Sure.
And that's why I like to go there.
Well, and we certainly do have our, you know, guitars that are just kind of normal everyday guitars. And honestly, when we have a lot of vintage Gibsons, Gibson acoustics from the 60s that come in all the time.
Yeah.
But they're always the wrong year for some reason, as far as the vintage collectability goes.
Right.
You know, they're either a couple years off or the condition is bad or something, to where they're super cool,
right?
But they're not ultra amazing, you know, incredible super cool like this one is.
Right.
So it's really exciting when something like that comes in. And yes, the first thing I do is take several really awesome pictures of it and put it on Facebook specifically for Jen to look at.
Right.
And lust after.
So in addition to your awesome Facebooking superpowers, I believe that we all have some unique superpower that we bring to the table that's been instrumental in our success. So what's your superpower, Amy?
You said instrumental. That was funny.
Get that?
Gee, well, you know, I think it might be the fact that because I've grown up in the store, not just in the industry, but in the music store, I know so many people. And I've known so many people that are musicians in Indianapolis that, you know, since I was little.
Right.
And I am comfortable talking with anybody.
Uh-huh.
Which is something that you have to be in retail in general, but especially in the music business. And my grandpa always used to say that, you know, no matter how bad the pig farmer smells, you know, his money is the same.
Right.
And he's absolutely right. And we don't have as many pig farmers that come in anymore, but we still got some people that are kind of on the smelly side that come into the stores, you know, and that's kind of a musician thing. We don't like to shower sometimes, but no, it's anybody that comes in, you know, whether they're buying a 50 cent pick or a $5,000 guitar, I mean, they're all the same. Their money's all the same. And I love talking to all of them. And I think that definitely helps with everything that I do at the music store.
Yeah. Is that something that you were just born with, or do you think you've kind of developed it over the years?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I definitely have gotten a lot of my, I guess, retail vernacular and stuff just from mom and from being around salespeople and salesmen all my life. And normally it's cool. I did have one guy a couple months ago that said, you're trying to sell me. It's like, no, I'm really not. But I stopped and think about it. It's like, you know, I guess that's just kind of the way that I talk sometime when I'm trying to sell some, trying not necessarily to sell something, but to show a guitar to somebody. And I guess sometimes it kind of comes out as, you know, very used car salesman. Hey, how you doing? You know, and I don't want it to. It just kind of happens sometimes. I can't help it, but.
Well, and some of the other things I think you guys have done that are pretty cool too, as far as driving traffic and bringing people in, or tell us a little bit about some of the other events that you guys have sponsored.
Sure. The big one that has been really, really great for us the last 2 years is the Third Friday on the Plaza in Fountain Square. And it's a outdoor concert series on the third Friday of every month in Fountain Square on the plaza outside. It's all local musicians. We try our best to get people there to play that don't normally play in Fountain Square, mm-hmm. you know, that play in other parts of the city, not only to get their, you know, crowd and their audience to come to Fountain Square.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of them, you know, are still a little weird about Fountain Square. You know, is it safe to come there during the day and stuff like that? Which is, of course, is just silly. But, you know, people still think because it's downtown and because it is Fountain Square that maybe it's a little bad, but it's not.
I love it there. It's one of my favorite places to hang out. It's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. But to get those people to come into Fountain Square, but also to introduce Fountain Square to other bands and music that you don't normally hear.
Right.
It's getting much more diverse now with Hi-Fi that just came into Fountain Square,
mm-hmm.
And White Rabbit and places like that, where they're bringing in a lot of different stuff. But for a while there, when Fountain Square was really starting to build up, there were about 10 bands that kind of just rotated the different clubs that would play all the time, unless mm-hmm. there was somebody from out of town that came in or whatever. But we're trying to bring in different artists that haven't been to Fountain Square before, you know, to play, and obviously give them a place to play that is under 21.
Uh-huh.
Because there's so many bands that only play in bars and stuff,
right.
And then their family or their kids can't come.
Uh-huh.
And that's just the best. We just had the Pork and Beans Brass Band play.
Nice.
And it's a 10 piece New Orleans style brass band that came and played. And one of the trombone players has a daughter, and she is 2 years old. She's never seen her daddy play before.
Oh, wow.
And because they always play in clubs and stuff. And she went right up to him as he was playing his solo in front of the microphone and is trying to crawl up his jeans, trying to get up, you know, so he would pick her up. It was the cutest thing ever. But that's, I love that. I love the fact that, you know, the kids and different people can come and hear you in a situation like that and in a place like that that they normally wouldn't be able to. So,
right.
Yeah.
And how about the bluegrass jams?
Oh, yeah. The bluegrass jams. I totally forgot about the bluegrass. we have bluegrass jams every Tuesday night throughout the year. The only time we don't do it is from Thanksgiving to New Year's.
Uh-huh.
Because the month of December is just absolutely ridiculous at the music store. We've got so much going on and so many people in. We just can't possibly do it then. But every Tuesday night, the rest of the year, from 5 till 8 o'clock, we have an open bluegrass jam. Anyone can come, any skill level, and any instrument, as long as it can play bluegrass.
Nice.
We had a guy play a bajo sexto that came one day to bluegrass, and we were kind of weird about it, but it was killer. He did this, like, kind of Mexican bass rhythm thing behind the traditional bluegrass songs, and it was so freaking cool.
Nice.
So different, but still sounded, you know, really, really neat.
Uh-huh.
And we have students that come and play that are 8, 10, 12 years old that come in and they have just learned how to play their fiddle or their mandolin. And
uh-huh.
they come and do their, you know, cute little easy songs.
Yeah.
And the old guys love it. That's the thing about bluegrass. It's mostly older people that come
mm-hmm.
On a regular basis. And then we have Hot Shots that uh-huh. come every once in a while when they're not playing other shows. You know, they'll come and sit in, and I mean, just pickers that'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
And we love it, obviously, when those guys come.
Yeah.
But the standard group, there's about 10 or 15 people that are guaranteed to come every week.
Wow.
And then we'll have up to, in the summertime, especially when it's nice and we have it outside in the garden, we'll have 30 pickers.
Oh, wow.
And 20 or 30 people watching.
Uh-huh.
And we have a big garden area outside the back of the music store where they all sit and pick in the summer. And the sound just kind of wafts throughout Fountain Square.
Nice.
You know, you can hear the sound of banjos everywhere, kind of bouncing off buildings and stuff. And so people will be walking their dogs, you uh-huh. know, after work and just come in and hang out, you know, yeah. for half an hour. We have people come and bring fried chicken in a blanket and, you know, sit and
yeah.
eat dinner while they're watching you know, the guys pick. And yeah, it's a super cool event. And like I said, anybody can come and pick, anybody can come and listen. And it's just it's a lot of fun, all ages. There's no smoking, no alcohol. It's just good, good fun. Yeah.
What a great way to establish a presence in the community too. I'm sure the whole neighborhood loves that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That is awesome. So you've been doing this for a while. What is the most mind-blowing experience that you've had happen so far? When you're just like, did that really just happen here?
Well, I can think of, there's hundreds of things running through my mind right at the moment, hundreds of stories. I've got a couple funny ones.
We love funny here.
Absolutely. The most hysterical thing that I've ever heard at the store. I was showing a gentleman a Strat, and he asked me what kind of wood the body was of the guitar. And there was another customer that was an older gentleman, very hillbilly, as we tend to have at the store quite often, kind of hanging around, listening to what we were talking about. And when the other guy asked me what wood it was, he said, "Is that poplar?" And the hillbilly came up and said, "Oh yeah, that's Fender Strat, boy. That's the most popular instrument you're going to find." And the guy and I just kind of looked at each other and we didn't know what to do, because you don't want to laugh in the guy's face, you know, because that's kind of rude. So. But I was like, "Yes, sir. Absolutely. It's definitely one of the most popular instruments you're going to find."
Oh my God.
That was definitely it. Did that just happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
And man, I wish I had that on video. That would have been internet gold right there.
Oh, completely. Yes.
Oh, geez.
What else? Give us another one.
Okay. So we were just hanging out one summer in the store, and there weren't as many people in, and the door opens. And a lady in a very, very nice suit, she had to be 6'5". I mean, just this statuesque, incredibly dressed, well-dressed lady with dark sunglasses walks in. And we were all just like, wow, that's out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
And she walked in and kind of looked side to side and looked all around and then walked right back out the door. And we're like, yeah, okay, that's normal. She's obviously not in the right place.
Right.
But then she comes right back in with a gentleman that looked kind of like a, you know, downtown transient or something, at a Hawaiian shirt on and those body glove shoes where they have all of the toes have different.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is so gross. Anyway, and he came in and just disheveled hair and just looked not nice at all. Uh-huh. And I was like, this is really strange. And he walked right over to the guitar wall and sat down and was looking at some stuff. And so I went over and she's just kind of, you know, looking around cautiously.
Mm-hmm.
And I go over to the guitar wall and I get behind the wall and I say, you know, "Sir, is there anything I can help you with?" And I look right at him and it's Joe Walsh.
Nice.
And yeah, he did not look like anybody that you would want to see in a dark alley.
Yeah.
It was Joe Walsh.
That's awesome.
And she was his agent / bodyguard, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, that's fabulous.
Big scary lady. And he looked at a bunch of guitars and played some stuff. And then after he left, or he bought a Strap.
Cool.
Okay. And so then he played, he's on some video, some Eric Clapton concert.
Uh-huh.
And he's playing in the concert with his police line do not cross Strap that he bought from the store.
It's that's awesome.
Yeah, that was like a couple months after that or a month after that. But then afterwards, I got to say to people, "Hey, you want to buy this guitar because Joe Walsh just played it."
Yeah.
It's got Joe Walsh sweat on it.
That's awesome. All right. Now we're doing my new favorite segment of the show. It's called Douchebag of the Day. Because as chicks working in the music industry, on occasion, we tend to run across some guys that are like, "Well, what?" you know, like maybe we shouldn't be there or for whatever issue that they have. So, Amy, and you don't have to name names, but do you have a douchebag of the day story for us?
Well, you know, I don't have one. No.
How many do you have?
And that's just it. I mean, there have been dozens and dozens. And I'll tell you, it's gotten better.
Good.
But not only, you know, the women in general, but women in the music industry is a whole different story.
Uh-huh.
And especially someone like me who knows stuff.
Right.
You know, I've got boobs, so I can't know
right.
stuff. And I had, you know, the occasional old guy that's like, you know, can I help you, sir? Oh, no, that's okay. I don't need anything. And then, you know, Dimitri or somebody would come around the corner. Can I help you, sir? Oh, yeah, I'd like to see one of those. It's like, well, now, wait a minute.
Right.
You know, I just talked to you.
Yeah.
And we don't work on commission, so that's not the issue.
Right.
You know, it's the issue of why can't I get that guitar down for you? But
yeah.
you can. And then, of course, it just bites him in the ass when they say, you know, well, son, give me a deal on that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let me go ask Amy and she'll write
right.
you a deal.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then they just kind of go, oh, gee, sorry.
Yeah. Well, and how was that with the whole repair thing too?
You know, I definitely have issues with that. And that's part of the reason why a lot of times we don't tell people.
Uh-huh.
You know, if we kind of know. You
yeah.
know, and if we know that they're the kind of people that are going to, or the kind of men that are going to be weirded out by a girl fixing, you know,
right.
their guitar. You know, we just don't tell them. Steve will yeah. write it up and say, yeah, I'll have Mark work on that, you know, or
uh-huh.
something like that, knowing full well that I'm the one that's going to be doing it.
Right.
And a lot of times when the guys find out that it was actually me that do it,
uh-huh.
then they're okay.
Yeah.
You know, and this, because they're like, okay, you know, this does play really, really well now. I really like the way, you know, the repair was done
uh-huh.
and she did it. So, you know, it must be okay. And she must
right.
be okay. And it definitely early on, that was a big thing. And really it was more because that was, gosh, that was early 2000s. And,
yeah.
you know, there was still a lot of, you know, I guess, tension like that. But now a lot of that generation is no longer coming in because they've passed away or they're
mm-hmm.
just too old or whatever. And, you know, so I don't have as much of that now, but I certainly did.
Right.
Early on.
I'm sure. All right. So now another favorite segment of the show for me, because we're just dividing everything into segments. I'm going to make life really easy when I go to edit this.
Sure. Absolutely.
So what's in your purse, Amy? Or I guess maybe I should say in your diaper bag.
Yes. In my diaper bag.
That you can't live without right now.
Gee.
Is it technology? Is it an app? Is it, what is it?
My phone,
yeah.
100% my phone and a Wi-Fi connection. When I see something, and this is exactly how it happens. I will walk around the store and say, okay, I need to post something on Facebook. I need to get something. And, you know, I'll just look around and I'll say, okay, I really like the way the light is shining off of that, you know, chrome on that pickup right there. So,
uh-huh.
you know, just take it out of my pocket. Like a picture, one tap, and it's on Facebook. That's the number one thing. And if five people look at it or if 50 people look at it, it will start a conversation.
Yes.
People will share it. You know, that is what is driving a lot of the business that we get. So that is
Absolutely.
The number one tool that I have.
All right. Good to know. And since this show is about music, technically, I guess, what music are you listening to lately? What are you loving?
Lately, well, I am definitely an old school metalhead.
Uh-huh.
100%. And that is pretty much all that I listen to. However, we did a lot of advertising, on WTTS, radio station for Third Friday on the Plaza. And
mm-hmm.
because it's always cool to hear the commercial that you wrote, you know,
right.
actually on the radio.
Yeah.
I've been listening to that a lot lately and I'm digging it. It's very strange for me
uh-huh.
to be listening to like mainstream kind of rock pop stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I'm kind of digging it. The, what's that new guy? Take Me to Church. What's
that? Oh, yeah.
Love that song.
That's a great song.
Yeah. And I just had his name. But it's in a Brad Pitt movie commercial now. And there's a couple other things. And I was, you know, good for that guy. You know, yeah. He just came on the scene. The song's only been out for a couple months, but it's really going good for him. But yeah, my preference is definitely like Iron Maiden and Dio and Judas Priest, stuff like that. UFO is a big one for me also, and Deep Purple. And yeah, I kind of missed the 90s because I was going backwards at right. that time, because I did hair metal kind of like a lot of people, and like somebody else that I know that
right.
had an awesome Maybe picture it's... of big hair on the radio or on the internet. That was killer. Yeah. Fantastic picture of you, Jen.
Thank you.
Ladies listening, if you get a chance to look at that picture at some point,
I think I'm going to have to put it on the website now.
It's an awesome picture.
Yeah.
But I did that. And then instead of going to grunge like everybody else my age, I kind of regressed backwards. And I said, you know, okay, there's some reason why, you know, this music exists. At the time that the hair metal, there's a reason why this exists. Why is that? What are their influences? And I started going back doing that. And I kind of just got stuck. and very, very rarely go into the 90s anymore. It's normally late 60s and very heavily into the 70s. The second wave of British heavy metal, that's kind of my my little wheelhouse that I always really dig. And it definitely makes me feel good. It makes me feel home with stuff like that. And I was at a party, a Halloween party the other day, and they played some Jane's Addiction, and they had a big musicians, you know, everybody there was a musician. And so everybody grabbed a guitar and they started playing Jane's Addiction. And I was just kind of in the corner, kind of twiddling my thumbs, because I didn't know the words. And every single person in the party, there's like 30 people there in this guy's kitchen that all knew the words, and they were all screaming at the top of their lungs the lyrics. And it was super cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it was such a neat vibe. And you know, everybody, the hair on your arm was standing up, it was so cool. But I had no clue what the heck these people were saying in this song, just because I didn't really do that that part. And it's kind of strange for somebody my age to say that. But yeah, but I think that has also helped me a lot, too, with dealing with a lot of the people in the music store. Because there's certainly something to be said for, you know, the 90s music and the different music that somebody my age has grown up with, but to also know and appreciate, you know, all of the older stuff.
Right.
Too. And obviously a lot of people that come in the store wouldn't say that 70s is older at all.
You right.
know, they are more interested sometimes in 1890s music all the way up, you know, to the 50s and everything in between. I'm getting there. I did a, you know, kind of folk bluegrass, kind of Gillian Welsh type of thing for a while. And Denise and I were doing that two girls and guitars thing for a while at open stages. And then I started doing kind of a honky tonk thing and was into that for a while. But I'm starting to kind of go back and do kind of 40s and 50s pedal steel music and Hawaiian steel music. And all of the stuff that the guys that were stationed in Pearl Harbor and places, and they came back from the war and they brought back to Indianapolis, you know, and brought back to their hometown, you know, that kind of music that is super, super cool.
Yeah.
And has so many roots in every kind of music.
Yeah.
Now that people play. And that's, there's so many guys that are still around that like that stuff and play that stuff. Unfortunately, the numbers are dwindling. A lot of those guys are in their 80s now. But if you get a chance to talk to them and hang out with them, that I do all the time, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And sit and listen to their stories and hear about their experiences and stuff. Very, very cool. Yeah. I'm getting a little choked up, kind of verklempt. I love it. But yeah, that's definitely something that I would like to get more into, is that that style. It's a little difficult now with a 1 year old. I'm going to use that excuse for the next year, and then my excuse will be I have a 2 year old.
Right,
but, you know, for now, you know, and I don't get much time to myself.
Sure.
To kind of listen to that kind of stuff. However, I will say that Samantha and I have been watching a lot of SpongeBob at 7 o'clock in the morning because for the first time in my life, I'm up at 7 o'clock in the morning. And she really digs the intro music, not the SpongeBob theme song, but mm-hmm. you know how familiar you are with SpongeBob, but,
it's been a little while.
Yeah.
I'll be looking for it now though.
But the music that they actually have in the show is all Hawaiian pedal steel.
Makes sense.
All of it is ukulele music and Hawaiian pedal steel and stuff like that. And Samantha just digs the crap out of that. She'll That's sit awesome. There and she'll bop, you know, to the music and she will be completely focused on something else. And as soon as that comes on, she'll just turn her head to the TV and just start bopping. And she does that at the music store too. When, you know, we'll just be hanging out and we'll be talking and playing and Chet Atkins will come on the CD player and she'll just stop what she's doing and start bopping, you know, or she has incredible taste in music.
Yeah.
Although her first love, her first song was, on The Simpsons, we were watching The Simpsons, and Bart had his first kiss, and he was going to strut home, and they played Stayin' Alive.
Oh, gosh.
And that was the first time that Samantha ever started dancing, was to Stayin' Alive.
Makes perfect sense.
So now if she's ever fussing, I just pull up the Bee Gees on the YouTube and play it, and she loves it, and I'm not really sure where she got that, but you know,
I love it.
It's a good beat though. And yeah. really, if you listen to it now, you know, if you get it, take away all the cheesiness, it's actually a really good song.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, the fashion is what it was at the time, but the video is cool and
nice.
I am finding a new love for the Bee Gees because of my child now.
There you sure go. About that, but yeah. I love it. That is so awesome. Well, Amy, I cannot thank you enough for taking time off on your day off to come hang out with us, even though I can hear Samantha
yes.
probably crawling up above the studio here.
Uh-huh.
But everybody upstairs is having a great time.
I'm sure they are.
So I think we need to go join them. So thanks so much for stopping by today and chatting, sharing some great stories and resources and the way that you guys do things. Before we go, what's the best way for our listeners to check out some of that eye candy and vintage gear that you're sharing so freely?
Devil woman. We have a list of the used gear that we have in stock, just a list, on our website at arthursmusic.com. But the real eye candy is going to be on our Facebook page. And it's just basically the Arthur's Music Store Facebook page, facebook.com/Arthur's Music Store, I think. Anytime we get anything halfway cool on there, I will post pictures of it. And I try not to do too much, you know, so that people will actually follow me and not not unfollow all the time. But yeah, so the Facebook page and the website. And of course, coming into the store, that is the yes. best way to see all of the great stuff that we have at Arthur's Music Store is just to come on in.
Well, Brassy Bastion, my glass is empty and my head is full. You can swing by brassybroad.com to check out the show notes with links to any websites and resources we mentioned. And if you like what you hear, subscribe and share it with anyone else you think would dig it. That's how we build the community. The conversation continues on the Brassy Broad Facebook page and at Brassy Broad Jen on Twitter. I would love to hear from you. Until next week, be brazen, be bold, and rock on.